Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 295 of the Peristyle Podcast. Wow, we're getting up there close to 300. Today is November 18th, 2013. We got a big show for you this week on the podcast, of course, talking all about USC's victory over number four ranked Stanford over the weekend. Huge win, biggest win of the Coach O era, biggest win in the program since 2011 at least. And we're going to talk a lot about that game. We're going to talk a lot about Coach O. We got Dan Weber coming up later on in the show, and Coach Harvey Hyde here in the first segment. We're going to try to get to all of your questions. And if you have questions for us, podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address, or you could call 206-888-6755. Write that down, 206-888-6755, or just go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. And you can click on the left side of the page, leave a voicemail right from your computer. Well, we got Coach Harvey Hyde here. He's going to talk about the game, talk about Coach O. Lots to get to. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, Ryan, thank you very much. And the first thing I want to do before we get started, I want to thank you very much for coming on my USC Trojan Talk show last Thursday. I really enjoyed having you there at the Settabella Pizzeria in Pasadena. Your wife and you came up. It was a great time as far as spending with you, plus doing the show and all of our people that were there, plus all the people that listened in Las Vegas and Inland Empire and Coachella Valley and all of those areas. Want to thank you, too. So I just wanted to say that before we get started. And now we can move into whatever you want to talk about. But I tell you, the Trojan Nation is fired up, and I think that's the best way to explain it. I've never seen a field. Now, I've seen a lot of fields full of people, but I don't think I've ever seen the entire Coliseum floor covered with people. Have you?
I don't know. I mean, in 96, when they rushed the field after Notre Dame, I don't remember how full it was, but I don't remember being that full. This was just like full of humanity from goal line to goal line.
And not only that, I think this was the biggest victory. Now, people might say, Coach, you're not right. But I think as far as momentum-wise, emotionally, and the whole package, I think this was the biggest win since the Notre Dame push, Matt Leinart push by Reggie Bush.
The Bush push, interesting. Yeah, I mean, some big wins. You know, and Lane Kiffin gets a lot of flack, but he beat Notre Dame on the road that year. It was a crazy game. He beat Oregon on the road, and no one did that. Chip Kelly, no one beats him up there. So there's been some big wins, but you could certainly argue this is bigger than them and maybe one of the biggest in, like you said, about a decade or so. Before we jump into things, Coach, I just want to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. You can go to sctickets.com. If you want to go to the two games left on the regular season for the Trojans, you can go at Colorado or, of course, UCLA. Give them a call, 1-800-888-7287 if you need tickets for any kind of sporting event. Hockey season's going on. You got the Clippers doing pretty well. Lakers not as well, but a lot of stuff going on. You want to go to a show, something like that, you can go to sctickets.com and they'll help you out. And if you want to follow the coach on Twitter, he's at Coach Harvey Hyde. He loves to tweet out during the games, and he'll tweet back at you if you want to tweet at him. And you can follow me at Inside Troy, so that at Coach Harvey Hyde and at Inside Troy. And Coach, I guess, I don't know, I don't like to ask you really open questions like this, but man, that was a crazy game. What'd you think, USC Stanford?
Well, I think it was a great football game. What I mean, two great teams with great athletes competing at the highest level. And during the third quarter, I started thinking to myself, I hate to see now people will say, Coach, how can you say this? Both teams are playing so hard, I said it's hard to believe one of these teams are going to have to lose with the effort they're giving. But I know the feeling of walking across the field after you've had a game like that, shaking someone's hand and saying, good game, and then going back and thinking for the next year or maybe the rest of your life on what if this had happened, and what if that had happened, and what if we'd have made this field goal or not dropped that pass or whatever. As the game went on in the second half, the Trojans continued to fight hard, like everyone knows now. Only 13 people played on the defensive side of the football the entire game. I did not realize that during the game. And that means that the defense held up, played hard, and created what was necessary to beat Stanford, which was Stanford had to give you help, which they did. They dropped a long pass, the first pass of the game. They dropped a couple of other passes. They burnt their timeouts early in the game. They did some things like throw two interceptions, two key turnovers at the right time, a blocked field goal, all the things you have to do to beat a great team. Because let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, Stanford is a great football team. USC is a great football team. On the mend, let me put it that way, on the mend of bringing back the toughness and the physical type of football that SC people are used to playing with. So you saw that happening in this transaction, at this game, as far as this being developed, as far as not quitting, playing hard every play, going against a very physical football team, and not giving up. And when it came down to the end, when it was fourth and two, and Coach O decided to go for it, and they went for the win. They went for the win and got that first down. Then I knew they were on the path to victory because of that type of gamble at that time, and they made it pay off. Now, if you would not have made that first down, everyone would have been criticizing that call. If you went down and missed the field goal, I'm not sure if your momentum, you would have been a little bit down to get into overtime, but you had a chance to win, and you didn't win. So everything went right. Two great teams. SC beats the, 4 years in a row, they haven't been able to beat Stanford. They did that at Oregon State. So they've beaten two teams now they haven't been able to beat, one on the road now and one that didn't make any difference where. And now they look forward to a road game against Colorado. Gather their horses, gather everything together, rehab, get ready, and then take on UCLA at home at the Coliseum. So great football game. I mean, and before the game, Ryan, if you're listening to the program, pregame show, I said, you know who figures this game better than anybody is the bookies in Las Vegas. And what did the game go off at? 3 points. What was the difference in the game? 3 points. Now, when you want to, you try to figure that out, how they know these things, or I don't know how they know them. It's not that they know them. But how can you figure this type of stuff? It's unbelievable. And in the pregame show, I picked the Trojans to win. I just had a feeling, and my feeling was they're the hottest team believing right now in the Pac-12, believing in themselves, believing on what they're trying to accomplish. Not that Stanford doesn't have that same feeling, but I just felt the carryover from the Cal victory and the other victories and what's going on at USC right now. Somehow they'd find a way to win it, and they did.
Certainly did, Coach. And it's hard to argue with the momentum with that Coach O's been building there. 4 years in a row, there have been some bad breaks, I think, at the end of games, these Stanford games that didn't go USC's way. There were breaks that went USC's way this time and get some big plays. Not really breaks, but getting some big plays. A few big plays in the fourth quarter, nailing that 47-yard field goal, a couple of interceptions, blocked field goal. I think we talked about this, Coach. I thought USC would win. There were two reasons. One, I thought this was going to be Marquise Lee's breakout game this season, and he didn't have great numbers. It was like 86 yards or something like that, but huge plays, two-point conversion, a play that got him down to the one, setting up a touchdown, the fourth and two play. So some really big plays, key gutty plays by Marquise Lee. And then I thought that this would be the year that USC actually made a play in the fourth quarter. I didn't think it would take like three big plays in the fourth quarter to win. That's what ended up happening with a couple of picks in the long field goal, but it ended up going down that way. And it kind of evens out, I guess, Coach. Stanford's really just had their number the last few years, and this was finally the year. Whatever reason, they were able to make those plays in the fourth quarter and get the win.
You're exactly right. It came through that way, and it's a great victory for the Trojans, now they can't waste too much time celebrating. It's over with. They got to start thinking about Colorado. Colorado had a nice win over Cal. They're going on the road. We don't know what the weather's going to be like. It probably will be cold. They've announced the kickoff at 6:30 our time on the Pac-12 Network. Don't get me involved with the Pac-12 Network this morning. Please, was all rant and rave about that. And I think a lot of people who, I don't know, Ryan, did you listen to the Trojan Brunch Show?
I got to listen to you for the first hour or so, but then I had to go do stuff.
You had to go. Okay, then maybe I'll explain it again. We had Clay Helton on, the offensive coordinator from USC, and coach to coach, I was talking to him about the different type of coverages and the different type of routes and pass protections they were using. And I asked him, I said, Coach, on that 4th and 2, how did you determine what play you were going to run? And we were talking earlier, too, about whether he's better on the field or in the press box. And we talked about that. He likes to be on the field because he can talk to the players. And he said, earlier in the game, when we were in the slot right formation, Marquise and I were talking. Marquise came to me and said, Coach, when we have the slot, he plays me for some reason to the outside when Marquise is in the slot. He says, I can beat him to the inside. So we talked about it, and then when we called timeout, or Coach O called timeout, he came to me and he says, do you have the play? Do you have the play that we need to do this? And they looked at Marquise and I looked at each other, and we said, we do. He says, let's do it. So when they went out there, now I rewatched the game. I don't know if you rewatched the game, but the game was on last night real late, and I happened to watch it again. I wanted to see this play. They got in that formation, and actually the guy didn't play him outside. The guy played him head up, this is Marquise Lee, in the slot. And because of a great pass from Kobe Kessler and a great catch, but he wasn't wide open, the play worked for the first down. So I wanted to know how that all came about on it, where they determined and how they determined that call. And he says, we had talked about it earlier, and we knew possibly what we could do, and that's why they did that. So I just thought I'd just pass that on to everybody in case they missed it on the air yesterday.
Okay, good stuff there. I want to talk about the game a little bit, and we have to talk about Coach O. There's a lot of questions about Coach O on both sides, and so we're going to get your thoughts on that. We unfortunately can't get to everyone's because there's just too many of them, and there are a lot of them have to do with the same thing. So we're going to get Coach Harvey Hyde's thought on that in a minute. But first, one last thing on the game. We had this voicemail question for you I wanted to play.
Hey, Robin Yakaya. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, just a couple comments here. Great win. What an amazing game. Three things about the officiating that I'd like you to touch on here. First, the measurement when Stanford supposedly got that first down, and you could obviously see there was about 2 inches there. He was short of the first down, and the ref called it a first down. Can somebody explain that to me? Somebody's got to do something about that. That was amazingly incompetent. Second of all was a couple of the other things here I'm trying to remember exactly. But running into the kicker, because they didn't see you have to run in the kicker very hard, but there was a missed call there that should have been made. And I can't remember the third one. But anyway, dream scenario, USC Coach Carroll up in Seattle wins the Super Bowl, decides to come back and coach USC and keep Ed Orgeron on. Anyway, fight on. Thank you. Bye.
Well, I know what the third one must have been is that call where Josh Shaw shoved that receiver out of bounds. He came back in and he touched the football, which you can't do once you go out of bounds, whether you're shoved out or run out of bounds. And Suva Craven intercepted the pass. They had to talk about that, but obviously the call was correct. And SC, that was one of the turnovers that SC got at a great moment. As far as roughing the kicker or running into the kicker, that was a call, definite call, because I think it was Murphy. I can't remember who it was. It was Murphy, I think. turn back and look at the official, help the kicker up, and sort of look at him like he expected the flag. But they didn't throw the flag. So I really don't know. He did go down, and if you watch it closely, he did knock him down. Didn't hurt him, but sort of knocked him down. And that's not a personal foul. It's a five-yard kicker running. You're running into the kicker. That's a penalty. They didn't call that. They let it go. That was a no call. And then the other one on the measurement, no one has even addressed it. I don't think they addressed it at the post game. Ryan, you're probably at the post game interview, and I don't think Ed Orgeron would have commented on it anyway. But that is something I would really like to have. In fact, the people that watched the game on television, the announcers were stunned. The announcers were saying, rerun that, please. Rerun that measurement. And you could see it wasn't an inch. It was at least 2 inches short. And they awarded them the first down. I just couldn't believe that no one would say anything about that. I didn't even read about it in the paper.
Yeah, it wasn't addressed afterwards for whatever reason. But people were putting on Twitter right away. I don't know if you saw that, Coach, but they were posting screenshots of it showing that it was clearly short. And you saw that Hayes Pollard was jumping up and down going, yeah, it's short. Like the players thought it was short because it looked short. And then the officials said, no, it's a first down. So, yeah, another example. I mean, good question. Another example of the Pac-12 officials doing what they do, creating controversy where there really doesn't need to be any. And, it's hard. But it wasn't addressed. We didn't see it addressed by anyone afterwards. Sometimes they'll do a pool, have a pool reporter go and talk to officials after the game. Like that happened 2 years ago after the Stanford game when the clock operator kind of screwed things up and they didn't get, USC wasn't able to kick that field goal. And there's a bunch of things that went wrong. And so they would have one reporter go talk to them. But I didn't hear of anyone doing that this game.
You know, they've changed that. You know what the rule is now, that you can't have a timer from your campus or your university timing the game.
Yeah.
So that came from that. But I don't know. I think that if Larry Scott could get that straight in the way, maybe the next thing he might work on is a Pac-12 network,
He could, he could. I don't think we're getting it.
You laugh about that, but, they give the guy an extension, okay? I don't know how many things he does all day. I really don't. They've got somebody to, do everything. Everybody's in charge of everything. But please, I mean, the nation wants to watch, including Southern California and the Trojan fans, wherever you might be listening, would like to watch the game without having to go to a restaurant or a friend's house or something to watch USC football when it's on the Pac-12 network. And, he comes out and makes the statement again, well, we've been negotiating. They won't bend at all, and we're not going to bend because we can't go back on what we did as far as with the other networks, and we want the same or whatever. Well, first of all, you shouldn't discuss what the other networks get or what you're going to get from DirecTV. I would think that's some type of a private type of business deal. But as I have said before, most of us would be willing to buy it. So put it on as something you pay for, $10 for DirecTV. You can buy the fights. You can buy other things. Give us an option to at least buy it. And have the viewers be able to watch the Trojans play. So, let's see if he can get that taken care of here between now and 2020.
And there's a lot of basketball, too. So USC basketball is going to be exciting this year, and it's going to be a lot of games on the Pac-12 network, so it sucks that people can't be able to watch that.
Like, same thing, what was it, Sunday or Saturday, they had the volleyball match on.
Yeah.
And you couldn't even watch it. You can't watch anything. I mean, not just our university, when I say our USC, but everybody in the Pac-12. You would think the Pac-12 would be saying, hey, Larry, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah.
We just, you're making $3-4 million a year. Let's try to get this deal done. Let's work full time on it, please.
I agree, Coach. All right, well, we got to move on to other pressing matters.
Yeah, we do.
And so the big question, the win was great. USC's 5-0 in conference since Coach Orgeron took over, that ranked in the BCS now, number 23. Stuff really turned things around. Took a team that looked like it was left for dead and changed things. So the mood out there is there's a lot of fans, and we did a poll recently. I think it's 73% or so it's going on right now on the Peristyle, that people would rather keep Coach Orgeron as the head coach than hire anyone else from the outside. So emotionally, there's a lot of people, a lot of USC fans that really want Coach O. And I'm going to play you a voicemail question that kind of says the same thing. But there's other people, too, that are more logical or they're thinking differently, where it's, I'm not saying one side's logical or other. I'm just saying that, well, that people are so emotional about Coach O, but really you should get someone from outside the program, someone more proven, blah, blah, blah. So there's both sides of this, and people are pretty adamant on both sides. But I wanted to play you this voicemail question, Coach, and then kind of get your opinion on where you stand with Coach O.
This is Jason out in Connecticut. I think that Coach Orgeron deserves the job. I think that if Coach Orgeron does not get the job, I think that he deserves to be on somewhere on the staff, defensive coordinator somewhere. And I think he should be paid maybe not as handsomely as a head coach, but he should be paid very well considering the job he does for recruiting. Everybody's behind him. The students are behind him. The fans are behind him. You got to give the guy a chance. That's all.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of discussions on this. There's a lot of people talking about it on radio and media, and I discussed it on the pregame show with Keyshawn Johnson. There's two sides to this, and I think mostly my feeling is that the entire school is behind Coach O. Have you seen the, yeah, obviously, Ryan, you did, where the students are putting their arms together and making a big O, and they say, oh, go, oh, go. I don't know if there's another campus in America that goes Saban, go, or anything else. Not that Nick Saban isn't a great coach, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying the momentum right now is behind Coach Orgeron to be the head football coach at USC. The players all want him to be. I talked to several parents at the game. The parents are excited and want him to be. There's more of a communication between the parents. Most of the media wants Coach O to be the coach. And myself, I say, give me the reasons why he shouldn't be. He's going to be going through an 8-week interview process, which right now he's getting an A on. Most people say, oh, there's too emotion here. There's too much emotion. You've got to think out the entire process. Well, let me be completely honest with people out there. Let's think the process out for a minute. You talk about Coach Gruden. Okay, great, Coach Gruden. If he comes, when's the last time he visited a high school campus? How do you know what he'll do in college football? He's never coached in college football. I think he's a great person, does a great job, won a Super Bowl, all of this and that. But is he going to come realistically? No. Yes, he'd be able to get into a lot of homes. Does that mean that the local high school coach is going to support Coach Gruden because he's at USC when possibly they don't even know his assistant staff that he's going to bring? And right now Jim Moore and other coaches have personal relationships with coaches in recruiting. Is he too big? There's such a thing as that, too, as far as on that level, being above people. Then you look at Nick Saban. He's not coming to USC. They throw that name out. I mean, he lives in Alabama. They pay him whatever he wants. He owns the state. The cost of living is completely different there than here. Why would you move? He's having one of the top recruiting classes he's ever had. Just got the number one player in America. Then you look at Urban Meyer at Ohio State. These are the names that I would say that are going around. Urban Meyer, he's not coming to USC. Not that USC isn't an equal job. He's making big money.
He hasn't lost a game there yet.
Oh, I know. Well, why would he want to leave? Especially, probably has himself a 100-acre ranch there with a pond and a 10,000-square-foot home. And probably cost him. Probably was given to him, okay? In Southern California, you're both basically on your own. And what does it cost to live in Southern California? A lot of money. So, you know, you look at these names, and to be perfectly honest with you, the other names haven't impressed me at all. Jack Del Rio, great player. Great player at USC. I coach him in the Japan Bowl. Great kid. I get along with him fine. But has he ever coached in college football? Right now he's assumed a position as head coach at the Denver Broncos because of John Fox being not well. doing a great job, but that's where. So it's starting all over. Why do you need to start all over when you've got the deal going on and you know the coaches, the kids, and the parents aren't going to be happy if you don't hire Ed Orgeron? So you got to start over and mend all of that, too. And who are they going to call on to mend it? Ed Orgeron. Don't worry. I'm okay. I'm going to stay. If he stays, he's going to qualify for a head coaching job somewhere. I want you to know if they cut him loose or if he decides to go. So now these players sit back. They're depressed. The recruits don't know these new coaches. And they say what? Now, Sumlin at Texas A&M had a great success at Houston, but he won with the other coach's players. And whose players is he winning with now at Texas A&M? He didn't recruit Johnny Manziel. They don't play great defense there at Texas A&M. He's done a great job. He's been a head coach for 6 years. Nothing against him. Does he know Southern California in recruiting? No. Have these kids ever heard of him? Maybe. Has their high school coaches ever met him? Maybe. Where's his recruiting been? Probably in Texas. So is that a good match for the USC job, name-wise? Maybe. But didn't impress me. And yet he's a great coach and done a great job. But I don't get all fired up about as far him getting the job over at Orgeron. Lovie Smith, a lot of success. I'll bet you that half the players on USC's team has never heard his name or knows who he is. Not saying he wouldn't do a great job, but these are the names I hear. So I start to say, wait a minute, right now, when I look at this position with the momentum of what's going on, he can get the job. Now, you don't have to give him $5 million. Coach would take it on whatever you want to give it to him for. He just wants to be the SC coach, okay? And the players just want to play for him. So, you know, you don't have to give him a 10-year contract or a 5-year contract. Give him a 3-year contract with incentives. He would take that right now, and the momentum would continue. Now, let him evaluate the entire coaching staff. Let him evaluate the strength and conditioning program, academics, the whole package, and let it be his staff, his job, his team, and let him go. So that's my feeling right now on this position. I'm sorry I rambled so long, but I wanted to make it clear.
No, it's clear, Coach, and I think there's a lot of people that feel that way, and there's certainly other people. The points that feel the other way, I mean, the points you make up are clear, and there's good ones, too, where I can understand it's USC, and you want to get a proven head coach. Orgeron's track record here at USC has been great. The 5-1 thing is awesome, but, you know, it's one season. It wasn't great at Ole Miss, and I think there's reasons for that. But you definitely see people kind of, you know, taking shots at him and things like that. I'm not sure that the people are there realistic candidates out there that are better. And if Orgeron, I think, has helped himself as far as at least moving up, where maybe there was a list of 10 to 15 candidates that at the top are guys you really wanted. Maybe it's a Kevin Sumlin or someone like that. And at the bottom, they're more like high flyers or, you know, potential, you know, they could work out. If all the other guys said no. Well, at the very least, it seems like Orgeron has moved up the ladder where he's passed some of those guys who may have started off at the bottom of the list, and he's kind of moved above them where he's a better choice. Is he at the top? Is he the number one choice? Is he the number three choice, the number five choice? I'm not sure, but I think at the very least, he's at least advanced his stock up there where if they have their top three guys and they all say no, maybe Orgeron's next. Or maybe it's a top two guys or top one or who knows. But it seems like he's at least done that.
Well, I understand, you know, and a lot of people go to this Mississippi thing. Oh, he only won 10 games in Mississippi. Oh, really? Well, is Mississippi one of the prime coaching jobs in the world? Now, the guy there now has done well. The guy that followed Ed Orgeron did well. Why? Ed Orgeron brought a lot of great players to Mississippi. But after his players left, he got fired. So, you know, yes, he was young. He might have done some things that he wouldn't do again. He learned. Lou Holtz made a statement as far as, you know, it's one of the top jobs in college coaching, which I agree 100% on. And he says, well, they should go out and look. There's, you know, he doesn't have the experience. It needs a real high-profile coach. Well, Lou, why come you didn't stay at Minnesota? I mean, you know, Minnesota is a very comparable job, maybe with Mississippi. I mean, Lou didn't stay at Minnesota. Lou, he offered me a coaching job once, so I might be in a very, I'm not being negative. But when he went to, you know, why did he go to Notre Dame? Because of what it was all about. And yes, he was a proven coach, and he's an outstanding coach, and I think he does a great job on TV, and I enjoy listening to him as a motivational speaker, the whole package. But, you know, I think a guy deserves a second chance, but you learn a lot growing up. And how do you learn? By making mistakes. If you don't make a mistake, you don't learn. So I think now he's only thing I don't want him to do is overdo it, do overkill. I just want him to be himself, coach, and you know, you've done enough. Just go out and win football games now and leave it up to the people who make the decision.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's the million-dollar question. It's what everyone's talking about. There's people on both sides of the aisle, and they're not – suggesting coach, they're adamant. Whoever, you know, if you feel it should be Coach O, you're adamant it should be him. If you feel it shouldn't be Coach O, you're adamant that it shouldn't be him. So it's kind of a polarizing thing right now. And I know what, and we had our caller write in say he should at least be on staff. I wanted to ask you this, coach. Say that Pat Hayden does decide to get a big name guy, and maybe it's, for example,
what big name guy? Give me a big name guy.
No, I'm just saying, there's a possibility, coach, that he'd hire someone else to be such Coach O. He hires someone else. It could be anyone. I don't care who it is. Do you see an issue with Coach Orgeron staying on staff? A lot of people want him to stay, not just because there's going to be other people out there trying to hire him, which I think there will as a head coach, especially if he wins his last two games. But having he's such a popular figure, do you think you know, the new head coach, if you bring in someone from the outside, would want someone like that, that everyone else wanted as the head coach, and keep him on staff? I mean, it seems like there's potential for problems there.
I agree with you. Normally, when a coach applies for a head coaching position, it's automatically you're gone when the head coach comes in. But I think with the love of Coach Orgeron, it would be with the understanding from Pat Hayden, the new head coach coming in would have to keep him. That's just part of it, or we're not going to offer you the job. Because I think that if that was not in the contract, I think everything would go to you-know-what at USC if he was not retained. I just don't see that happening. My question is he going to want to stay? I know he has a love, and I know they'll pay him a lot of money. They'll probably up his salary another $500,000, really. Which he's making, I think, close to $1 million a year now, be the highest paid assistant probably in college football. But, you know, when you try and you try to accomplish a dream, and that dream doesn't happen, it sort of tears your heart out, yet you don't show it. Will he be the same? He can't be the front guy again. He's going to move to the back of the bus equally with everybody else. He'll be on the sideline. He'll be quiet. You won't hear him speaking and much on radio. You won't hear him talking because the new guy's got to present himself. And the new marketing tool has got to fall in place. So it's not going to be the same Coach Ed Orgeron with enthusiasm, with making the decisions on who's going to be recruited, but the new head coach is going to decide the standards of where they're going to recruit and what they're going to recruit. So it's going to take away a lot of who Ed Orgeron is. So I don't know if he'll want to face that and be that type of person on a staff. So he can only answer that himself. But I know the feeling of what this job means to him and what these kids mean to him. And to move and just become again what he was is great. That's who he is. But bypassing him, you say to him, you're good, but you weren't good enough. And you say in your mind as a person, why? What did I do wrong? I've been here. I've been loyal here. I've coached here. I've recruited here. We won here. As the period of time I was the head football coach here, we won. And you'll replay that in your mind over and over and over. And you, unless you're a different type of person completely, which he could be, that affects you as an individual. And that's the best way I can answer that.
All right. Well, we'll see what goes on there. And then, Coach, we mentioned last week, this is the last thing for you, you were going to give away a hoodie. So we want to give the best question away. So there's two questions here. So I'm going to read – I'll read one, and then you can answer. I'll read the other one, and you can kind of pick which one you think is the best question, and that person will get one of the Coach Harvey Hyde hoodies. So thanks for everyone for sending in the questions, but these were, we felt, the best two. First from Sean, I noticed one of Hadari's kicks. I noticed on one of Hadari's kicks he didn't line up straight. Usually it's three steps back and then two to the left. He seems to angle behind the kicker on his three steps back. So then when he went to his left, he was almost right behind the ball. Did you see this? And could this be part of the problem that he is having?
I did not see that, so I can't discuss that point. Part of the problem is if he's changing his alignment, it definitely is a problem. There's one thing that you must do is focus as a place kicker and continue with the same timing, step, holder, snapper, the whole package. And I just think it was focus, personally, being too relaxed and not focusing on how important each kick was and on that PAT. And what was the other question?
Okay, yeah, and then just to, I'm going to add to that for Sean thing. Hadari did address that a little bit after. I mean, he says what he does is every kick's the same. He doesn't even care what the distance is. They asked him, you know, there was two negative plays before he had to make that kick. It was going to be like a 38-yarder, and it ended up being a 47-yarder. But for him, he's like, he just gets, you know, he gets his spot, you know, with the holder. And he said, every time I just take three steps back and two to the left. So I'm, but we can ask Coach Baxter this week if he's noticed that something that's happening. I haven't, and Coach hasn't, but he does mention that. He mentioned that in the post-game press conference. It's three steps back and two to the left every time. Okay, and then the second question, Coach, is Mark in New York. If you're USC and you just played an amazing half of football like they did, what kind of adjustments, if any, do you make? Do you plan on just keep? Do you just plan to keep executing? Or do you try and anticipate how Stanford will change things and react to that? Everything obviously worked out well in the end, but would love your take from a coach's perspective. That's Mark in New York.
Well, the first half of USC football, I tweeted that out. I thought that was the best half of football SC had played in a long time. And what you do at halftime, you go in and review everything, but you can't really always anticipate what the other team's going to do. Because they were still in the game. They had to make some adjustments. They weren't getting their running game going like they thought they should be able to run. So you have to anticipate a little bit that they plan on throwing the ball more. Because they had some problems in the first half with drop passes and all this net that slowed them down. Basically, what happened, the same thing as what happened in the Utah game. If they'd have kept running the football, they'd have won the Utah game. What killed them this game? Was passing the football. They had to throw on third down in situations where they had turnovers, and that's because they couldn't run the ball the way they normally run the football to keep their first down, second and six, third and two, third and one, first down. They got thrown off their rhythm. They didn't have that opportunity, so they were forced to throw the football. And they're not the same passing team they were last year. Said that on the pregame show. They aren't as good offensively as they were a year ago. So it sort of threw them off of their rhythm. And you adjust as they adjust. You have to see what adjustments they make at halftime, and then you adjust. They do the same thing. When you adjust again, they adjust. So there isn't any reason at halftime to make any adjustments because everything's working, so you're waiting to see what their adjustments are going to be. And the same thing with Stanford. They were waiting to see what your adjustments were going to be, but they had to force you to make adjustments by doing different things. Otherwise, you'd have done the same thing and hoped that it worked again. And if it wasn't working, then you'd have to make other adjustments to slow down what they were doing. So, yeah, adjustments are very important. What you basically do is you talk about what alignments they're taking on you. What are they making calls or going towards formations, wide side of the field with their defense as far as gaps? And the second day, where are they playing you? Just like the same call that they did on that fourth and two, they had already talked about that in advance. so that you're ready for certain things and hoping that's still being played that way. So it just depends where you are in the game and what adjustments you make. At halftime, I don't think SC made many adjustments. And Coach Orgeron says it all the time, we're going to be who we are, and we're going to get better at what we do. And I think that's what they practice.
All right. Well, Coach, those were the two questions, the kicker question from Sean and the adjustment question from Mark. Who do you think's the winner?
Well, man, you pick it. I'm not picking it.
Let's go with Mark. We'll go Mark in New York. He said he could wear the hoodie. He'd be the only guy in New York wearing the Coach Harvey Hyde hoodie. So we'll give it to Mark.
All right, get Mark's address. Make sure you get it.
Yeah, Mark, write us in there, and I'll forward it over to Coach Hyde, and you can get your hoodie. So thanks to everyone for writing in the questions.
Put the size in there, too.
Yeah. Say which size you want. Coach Harvey Hyde has extra small or 4XL. That's the only sizes he has left. So
No. I hope it's a large or medium or small. All the big ones are going fast.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, Coach, thanks again. Thanks for everyone sending the questions, and thanks again for joining the show. Crazy, crazy weekend, but it was a lot of fun.
Sure is, buddy, and it's always great to be able to do a show after a great victory like that, and another big weekend with Colorado, and then, of course, UCLA. So, again, thank you, all of you out there, for participating, listening, and sending in your questions.
All right, and thanks very much, Coach, and everyone else back in a minute or so. We're going to talk with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Fight on, Trojan fans. We're all very excited about this season. My name is Louis Tangay, and I'm the managing director of Circle Marketing. Like USC, Circle Marketing has a long track record of success. Ours hasn't been on the football field, though. We have been very successful in helping the small businesses of America get the kind of marketing strategy and support previously only affordable by large companies. For example, by going to CircleMarketing.com, you can view our portfolio, read our case studies, and see how we were able to increase business by 90%, grow social media followings by 10 times what it was when we started, and how our websites and marketing strategies have helped our small businesses reach and exceed all of their marketing goals time and time again. So come visit CircleMarketing.com today, read our case studies and testimonials, and see what we've done for other small businesses like yours. Then contact us and find out what we can do to help your small business too. Circle Marketing, the company that fights on for your small business.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Welcome in, Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer. Hey, Dan, what's going on?
No, not much. Just the same old, same old. there was that Stanford game Saturday.
Yeah.
He showed up, 92,607 or whatever the number was. Most of them were on the field afterward. Met an awful lot of people. It was kind of fun. You were trying to find where Coach Orgeron was, and I was kind of there with Stanford coach David Shaw in vain trying to locate Ed for the first 10 or 15 minutes. But one of the nice things being down on the field is how many people would come up and introduce themselves and say they saw, you know, they said, you do the instant analysis. Oh, you're damn, you know, whatever. They would recognize you, people we had never met before who – And then somebody like Selma Vanuku's mom was down from Eureka and said, hey, haven't ever met you, but I get to see you on the instant analysis. I just wanted to say hi. There was that kind of a feeling down on the field after the game. It was like really personal and very pleasant, actually, and not a lot of, you know, pushing and shoving and all that. It was really kind of a neat experience.
No, it certainly was, and it was different. I mean, I think I can't remember the last time I was on a field that was rushed. It might have been at Oregon State, the Mark Sanchez year, or whatever year that was.
That was
kind of crazy. It was obviously the other way, but that was insane. That was hard. We were trying to get the players and stuff then, and it was really a difficult situation. I mean, everything just was mobbed.
Yeah, I think the first two times it happened in the same year, it was at Washington State. And on a late night game, and then at Cal, and both times didn't go the Trojans' way, and you can remember when it happened to you, but with USC, the Orange Bowl over Oklahoma, some people got down on the field, but it wasn't wasn't a lot, but that was the last time you had a, you know, kind of a comparable, you know, feeling on the field after a USC win.
Well, let's talk. We got to talk about the game a little bit, and then Coach O is like the big topic. I can't tell you how many questions. Sorry, we were not going to be able to get to everyone's questions, like I mentioned earlier, about Coach O. We'll try to do a couple things, but we'll get your opinions on it. We'll kind of talk about it a little bit. I'll let you know what all the different sides people are coming from. But you know, specifically on the game, I guess the most amazing thing to me, I think we knew going in that Leonard Williams was going to be a key. You play against Cal. They could use, you know, mostly nickel packages. They didn't need the five-man defensive front. But against Stanford, you certainly were going to need situations where you had the five-man front, and Leonard Williams was a key to that. Really no backups left. You're talking about walk-ons in the middle of the defensive line. You know, they got some guys that can play on the edge, but, you know, those three middle guys pretty much had to go the whole way. And it was, I was a little shocked when they announced in the press box that really there was just two defenses out there. There was 10 guys that played all the time. And then Antoine Woods would come in for Deion Bailey if they were going to do a five-man front, and Deion Bailey would come in if they were going to do the nickel. And that was pretty much it against maybe, you know, the best defensive line in the conference. I mean, were you, was that impressive to you? I mean, it was pretty crazy just hearing that and seeing what they were trying to do out there.
Yeah, I mean, and was it the game plan? I asked Ed that last night, and he said, you know, it kind of just developed that they, I don't think they went into the game thinking they could do that. As they should not have. No one should think you could do that against Stanford and, you know, go one deep on the front seven, basically, and not substitute. And because essentially the only substitute, Torn Harris got to play. The only substitute is Deion Bailey in or out? And are they, you know, going to play five in the secondary or not? And that's pretty much it, you know. So they went with pretty much 12 guys. And, you know, that's the fifth time this year they've, you know, played just three or fewer substitutes on defense. That's just unheard of. That's crazy. And talking to Leonard Williams after the game, he said he felt better after the game than he did after warm-ups. That he said, I feel great. You know, that's just amazing with all the double teams he drew. And when you stand down on the field at the end like we were and you see that Stanford offensive line, these guys are monsters. I mean, they're bigger than they're listed. I mean, they are really big human beings. And the way they use them for USC's defensive line to, you know, to stand up, what a job, you know, both Ed and Pete Jenkins have done with those guys. It's just, I mean, there's no way you could have, you know, thought that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hats off to those guys. And on offense, I wanted to. I had a question from Chris Davis, who was actually a USC freshman on the 1962 national championship team, and I really thought the offense looked good in the first half, and then, like we've seen many times before, not look as good in the second half. But his question, I'll let you answer it, is, in my opinion, one of the reasons SC hadn't scored much in the second half, like the Stanford game, is that whoever's the offensive play caller, so he's talking about Clay Helton, doesn't take the time to make adjustments at halftime. And I think the halftime adjustment thing comes up a lot, Dan. What are your thoughts on that? What Stanford?
Well, I don't think they've got that much ability to adjust at halftime. I think, for example, Stanford talked about, Trent Murphy after the game talked about how USC really fooled them in the first half that with what USC did and the way USC attacked them. Stanford wasn't ready for that. The problem USC's got is now Stanford knows this is what they're doing to us. This is what we have to do. I mean, probably the best defense in the country, okay? So they adjust. USC doesn't really, because of the depth, because of the kind of, you know, youth and inexperience of the offensive line and maybe just, you know, mano a mano against Stanford's defensive front, you know, there just is a kind of a strength deficit there. So USC doesn't have much of a plan B to go to. I think they might have gone away a little bit more from throwing the ball, you know, down the middle, you know, the fourth and two play, you know, to Marquise. That's the kind of play that might have still been there much, you know, in the second half, but it's, you know, high risk. So they didn't go to it. I thought the slower developing run plays just weren't gonna cut it against Stanford. So, you know, they didn't want to take any chances. You know, they were And that's one of the downsides of being in the lead at halftime. You're up 17-10, and you don't want to turn the ball over to, you know, give Stanford a chance. So you're balancing all of those realities. And the fact that they didn't, you know, get behind, and when they had to make plays on that last drive, they made them. I mean, the pass to Aguilar, you know, obviously the one to Marquez, they did enough good things. But I don't know that it's so much, you know, the not taking time at halftime to adjust. It's not having enough personnel, enough depth, enough strength up front to be able to take advantage. I thought they just did a marvelous job in the first half hitting Stanford where Stanford wasn't ready, you know, for them to hit them. And, you know, Stanford had given up 24 first quarter points the entire season in 9 games. USC scored 14. So you have to balance out what happened in the second half with what USC, the game plan USC went into the game with. USC just doesn't have enough people right now, I think, to have the ability to go to multiple, you know, ways to attack a defense like Stanford.
Ah, oh, great points there, Dan. All right, well, we had a few kind of quick questions. We got to get talked, you know, the we got to talk Orgeron and coaching and all that stuff in a little bit here, and we're actually at a question on Colorado, so we'll end with that one. But before we get to that, if you saw College Game Day, there was a great special on Jake Olson, and Jeff, the math teacher in Fountain Valley, wanted to know if USC should offer him as a preferred walk-on.
Oh, yeah, I mean, without even a doubt, that would be I mean, you couldn't have a better, you know, preferred walk-on, you know, than a kid who's been identified with, you know, this program, all the great things about this program, all the great things about college football, all the great things about Jake Olson. You put them all together, you just, you know, what I mean, you just can't have enough inspirations. And when you have one that's, you know, kind of homegrown and he's all yours and, you know, nobody else, you know, could even, you know, come close to, you know, being the right place, you wouldn't think for Jake. So what a great idea. Yeah, absolutely.
He actually wrote in, it's like, too bad he wasn't a senior so that USC could bring him in as a 16th scholarship and kind of as a a shot at the NCAA.
Yeah, I'd bring him in as the 86th scholarship guy or the whatever. I wouldn't, you know, yeah.
And let the NCAA try to do something about it.
Yeah, which they probably would. After some of their decisions this year, not USC-related, it's just kind of amazing how out of tune they are with, you know, with the world. But, you know, what will we expect? Who knows better about the NCAA? I know they keep coming up with these decisions that people say, how could they do that? And I think most USC people say, what do you mean, how could they do that? We know how they could do that.
Rundy had a quick question. Where is Lamar Dawson?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, wouldn't it have been nice to, you know, they have at least some backup, although how well is Anthony Sorrell playing? Lamar is up and out of his scooter. He got his ACL operated on, you know, I guess now, probably 10 days ago. So saw him at the end of last week in a scooter, and this week he's walking pretty well, actually. Hopefully by spring he's back. I don't know what, you know, what his ETA is in terms of the spring. I don't know if he'll be able to get back for spring or if he'll he'll be somebody who will, you know, be back in the mix in the summer. But he seemed like he did really well on his surgery.
That's good for Lamar. We'll see. I did see him walking on the sideline up through the tunnel when all the players were leaving, trying to get through that mass of humanity. Where actually there were some injuries, Dan, which it seemed like it was pretty calm there, but apparently there was a diabetic incident, there was a leg injury, and there was one other one. So.
High blood pressure, I think. The first report we heard were two cardiac issues, and that when the ambulances went by. But then, you know, USC got the word that, you know, all three had been taken to local hospitals. But I think one sounded like a broken leg, and the other two were, one was diabetes-related, one was high blood pressure. So, you know, you might, you know, I mean, you know, we weren't coming in from, you know, where the, you know, people were jumping out of the stands and all that. And So it wasn't all that, you know, that kind of a difficult crush. I've been in a lot worse, you know, post-game celebrations in basketball and football than what we saw on the Coliseum floor. But I guess if you're already, you know, predisposed to, you know, some health issues, or if you're jumping out of the stands, that may be, you know, the contributing factor. But it sure wasn't, you know, in terms of the crush itself. I thought, you know, the folks handled themselves really well.
Yeah, and it was the last time we were talking to sports information people, the last time they remember at the Coliseum being rushed was in 96, I believe, when USC broke the Notre Dame long losing streak. So that was the kind of last time. And, I talked to some people, and some people are happy with that, and I think a lot of it's not just the win. It's not just like a big win, but I think kind of Coach O is really involved in that. But other people felt like you shouldn't be rushing the field for Stanford. This is USC. So I don't know what you thought of that, but there was people on both sides.
Yeah, when you were out there, it wasn't so much that. It was more of a kind of maybe a celebration of, is this over now, maybe, you know, forget the, you know, bleeping NCAA and forget all the, you know, he who will not, you know, who should not be named coaches and all that kind of thing. And just let's go out and play good football and have fun. I thought it was more that, a celebration of USC football, than, we beat Stanford or whatever. I thought it was not so much that. It was more, we're back, this is what USC football, you know, should be, and let's enjoy ourselves. And I mean, a lot of it is everybody in the world wants to take pictures with the USC players.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's got a camera. Everybody's taking, I don't know where all those pictures go, but, you know, you couldn't, if you were a USC player, you couldn't get off the field without, you know, posing with families and kids and whoever else. Hopefully they're not on eBay, you know, already. But I know, like, poor Marquise, you know, people were, you know, had footballs. I don't know who brings footballs to football games, but people had footballs and they were asking him to sign them. And I know Marquise is looking up and saying, am I allowed to do this? You know, I mean, you don't want them selling, you know, having them on, you know, on the market, you know, 15 minutes after the game. But it was just one of those, you know, kind of maybe once in a lifetime moments in some ways for USC football.
And one last thing before we get to the Coach O stuff. I know, I'm sorry we're going kind of quickly, but there's a lot of stuff to get to. Marquise Lee, I mean, you saw him make that 4th-and-2 catch, and he couldn't even walk off the field on his own after that, it seemed like. And I got to talk to him. Bruce Feldman and I were kind of talking to him before the media came around, and you know, told him what you know, Cody Kessler said, as far as, like, he really just had one play left in him. And he's like, yep, that's it. I mean, he got kicked in the shin or whatever, or cleated in the shin, and he thought it was a bone bruise, and really just had, like, I'm going to go out there and make this one play, catch this 4th-down pass, and that was it. And I don't know how he even did it. He could barely walk.
Well, you could tell it wasn't one of those injuries that was, you know, going to damage him functionally, but it was so painful. I mean, if you've ever been kicked in the shin, it was on that long pass play where he got tangled up with the Stanford defender and just got kicked, you know, directly in the shin. So I think he just said, you know, I'm going to make, you know, 6 or 7 really quick, hard, you know, fast steps and make this play and then get out of Dodge. And, you know, I think by the time, I would guess a half hour, 45 minutes maybe after the game, he was walking pretty, I was kidding him. I said, should we start calling you Peg Leg? And he said, you know, he said, it's getting better now. He said, but it was just so unbelievably painful that, that you just couldn't, you know, you almost couldn't function except for the fact that, you know, it didn't, you know, it wasn't his knee, it wasn't his ankle. It was just something that was, you know, you just had to live with. And, you know, he said, I could do it for one more play, and he sure did. That was pretty amazing.
All right. Well, we got to talk about Coach O. We've had there's people on both sides of this, so I think the people that are on each side are very adamant about which side they should be on and which side's right. But I just wanted to play this kind of voicemail. It's kind of typical of some of the stuff we were getting.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Ryan, Coach, and Dan. Man, I tell you, this calls for Pat Hayden. If you don't sign Coach O to a long-term contract as head coach, there is something wrong with you, sir. A gutsy call on that 4th-down play, get us that field goal to win this game, incredible. I'm calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I've been a fan since 1965. And I'll tell you what, my name is Doug, and I love the Trojans, man. But, Pat, you need to sign Coach O. Thanks, guys. Have a great night. Great day.
Well, you know, Doug expresses it, you know, well, expresses exactly what Coach O has done, you know, in the improbable, you know, 6-7 weeks that he's come in and taken over the program. And I do think it gets lost in the, you know, the excitement, the emotion and all that of just how much smart coaching has gone on. Stuff that, you know, it's not as flashy as Roscoe's, you know, chicken and waffles or cookies or In-N-Out burgers and all that kind of thing. But this team didn't win Saturday night because of rah-rahs and dessert and all of that kind of thing. And it didn't win because of Coach O's, you know, Cajun, you know, call out, you know, on the sidelines. You know, it didn't win, you know, for any of it. It didn't win for Dr. Dre coming and talking to him on Friday night. It won because they were really well coached and well prepared. As well coached and well prepared as a team with that few options and that few players could be against Stanford. I mean, you know, Coach, honestly, I was, you know, here, you know, for all but the first year with Pete. And so I knew Coach O really well. And I knew how he coached then. I knew how he coached, kept up with him, obviously, at Ole Miss a little bit. And this isn't the same. This is all the good stuff, but this is a different guy. And this is a guy who's thought so much about it. And in some ways, that reminds you of Pete Carroll, who took the time when he was out of football to think about it and to figure it out. And when he got the chance again at USC, he really had it figured out. But if you go to a USC practice now, you think you're back at a Pete Carroll practice. It's amazing how he's been able to replicate, you know, the approach that Pete had. And I think that's more important than all the other stuff. All the other stuff is great, and it was necessary. But this is a really well-coached football team right now. And who's the head coach, you know? And how often do you see, you know, other people say it's not enough of a sample. It's amazing what's happened. If you look at, you know, where they were, somebody was writing on the P the other day about, you know, replaying the Hawaii game. And you know, it doesn't look like the same team. It doesn't look like the same sport almost. What he's done is awfully remarkable. And it's almost so good that you do really wonder, how do you go away from that? How does that – I'm working on a piece for tomorrow morning about just that very thing, about how does this decision get made at this point in time based on now what we know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be fair, there's people on both sides of this. And we did a poll on USCfootball.com. I think Coach O, we said Coach O or anybody else. And right now Coach O is about 73%. Most people want to see him. And, you know, there's people like the last caller, Pete in Fullerton wrote in that he wants to understand how, you know, Coach O's turned this program around. What qualifications are he lacking? And because there's criticism on both sides. Some people say, well, look at his record at Ole Miss. Is it, you know, it's the same thing. Just because he knows the fight song and he's an emotional guy doesn't mean he should get the job. And other people say, wait it out until the UCLA game. Everything's really emotional right now. And Pat wrote in, said, Chip Kelly leaves for the Eagles and Helfrich gets promoted. Harbaugh goes to 49ers. Shaw gets promoted. And they're both doing fine. Why does USC have to do a national search? So, I mean, there's a lot of
I think that's a really like good that. Point. I think it's just a very logical point. I think it allows USC to go back to – and I know that there may be people at USC who were kind of hesitant about going back to the Pete Carroll era. The players aren't. Fans aren't. You know, the results might not, you know, be hesitant about, you know, going back there. I mean, it was one of the, you know, the great things USC football had going for it, and one of the very fortunate things that USC got lucky in terms of hiring Pete Carroll. And who knows, you know, maybe they get lucky again. That had it not happened this way, there's no way, you would have had a chance to, you know, to see, you know, what kind of a coach, you know, Coach O, you know, is right now. I mean, the problem I've got with some of the people who, you know, who just are adamantly opposed to Coach O is they assume that there is someone out there demonstrably the right guy, demonstrably better, okay? But Urban Meyer isn't coming, and Nick Saban isn't coming, and that's it, okay? You can't get those two. Now it's a crapshoot. I mean, I know, I'm a, you know, from Kentucky, I know a lot about Louisville. I know about a lot about the Louisville program. I flew around the state of Kentucky when Howard Snellenberger got the job and on his first day, and when he rebuilt the program to where it is now. And I think Charlie Strong's really a good coach, okay? I don't know anywhere near enough about Charlie Strong, who they probably can't get, to say he would do a better job than Ed. I have no idea. Chris Peterson, Kevin Sumlin. I mean, I think Kevin Sumlin, you know, I can identify with Kevin Sumlin. He's a Jesuit high school guy from the Midwest, went to Brebeuf Prep in Indianapolis. I actually, as a columnist, I was in Chicago, I got to do some Purdue games. Paid a lot of attention to Purdue when Kevin played there as a linebacker. That was Joe Tiller basketball and grass, you know, football and grass or basketball, whatever they called it, with Drew Brees as a quarterback. And I don't remember Kevin, but I could kind of identify with him, and I think he's probably smart enough to know that the USC job is a really good job. But where he wants to go, what he wants to do, would he be, you know, the answer? How can you possibly know that? But we do know an awful lot about Ed right now. I just think, I think I might hold my fire if I were some of these people. You can't, all I could tell them is you can't possibly know enough to be absolutely sure about someone who hasn't been here, what he would do here. You can't possibly know that. And if you think you do, you're really, this is, it's kind of like the fantasy footballization of football, where people think they really are in charge, or they really, you know, are in control of their little own, you know, their own little football universe. You're not. Mostly we don't know. But we do know some things about Ed that we really didn't know a couple of months ago. And they're pretty interesting with regard to where USC football is going right now.
That's a good point. Well, I mean, I don't think Pat Hayden's going to do anything until after the season. So we'll have to kind of wait and see what's going on there. But I agree, Dan, there's just people on both sides of this that are just adamant that this is the right direction. And I don't know we don't know. There's going to be decisions made. You never know what's going to happen. And for people to be so sure is just kind of a little crazy.
And I do think we know a lot more about Ed than anybody else.
Yeah, no, that's
true. And what we know about Ed is pretty positive. I mean, the ability, you know, if you could chalk one thing up to why the last coach isn't still here, it was the inability to learn from his mistakes, the inability to learn from what was going wrong. Ed has proved that he has figured that out. And there may not be a better quality in a football coach than a guy who figures out that he understands my job is to win football games. My job is to figure out how to win football games. My job is to figure out how we lost football games and not do it again. That quality is something that Ed is showing us, and you don't get a chance maybe to show that until you get to be the head coach. But his practices are so well run. Just the one little wrinkle where he brought it from, he was only in the NFL 1 year, but he brought in the idea of we can't afford the ones going against the ones. We don't have enough bodies. We can't have plays where Marquise Lee and Sue Cravens are going for the same pass and one of them, you know, doesn't come out. But the ability to make the ones go against the twos and get full speed there, not against the scout team, but you get that full speed kind of work that you got with Pete. But it only works if the twos really are playing full speed. And you know how the twos play full speed? When they know they're going to get a fair chance. And if they, you know, compete well enough and play well enough and play hard enough, they're going to get a chance to play. That wasn't the case previously. So you see these full-speed workouts where the ones are going against the twos, where you have less chance of injury, but you do have that full game tempo and game speed. That's really good coaching. I've been to a lot of college football practices, and as Herb Herbstreit said last week, he said Peets were in a place all by themselves. There wasn't anything like it. You know, Herb has seen an awful lot of college football practices. And Peets and now Ed are going to that same place. That's good coaching. That's not Roscoe's. That's not in and out. That's good coaching. And that's what's happening. You don't beat Stanford if you don't, you know, coach them up. In a game where Stanford knows they got to win it, where they had extra days to prepare for, where every one of the Stanford players said, you know, we were ready. We were, you know, we knew what this was going to be. You know, this wasn't a game where they were overlooking anybody. And they couldn't get it done.
One last thing, Dan. We did some good stuff there, and we appreciate your insights and everyone. I'm sorry, again, apologize. We couldn't get every Coach O question in there. There was just so many. We wanted to at least talk in general about what was going on with that. Most of the questions were along the same line or in a few different categories. But Melvin, we're going to look forward to. There's two games left. Coach O, you know, took over with eight games left, 5-1 through 6, 5-0 in the Pac-12 conference. But Melvin wants to know, what kind of team do you think Colorado has thus far, and is it going to be an easy win for USC, or do you think Colorado can give USC trouble?
Well, they scored 41 against Cal, so and they won their first game, so they got to be feeling pretty good about themselves, which is, you know, it's a good thing. They've got the LA kid, his name escapes me right now, Richardson, I guess, wide receiver, who's really good.
Paul Richardson,
really talented player.
Sarah High School, yeah. High School, where Barkis Lee and...
Yeah, yeah. And just a great athlete. Came back from, you know, major knee surgery. Actually thought there was a chance he was coming back last year for the USC game. So they'll make it interesting. And, you know, the weather is probably going to make it interesting. We keep hearing about, you know, snow Thursday, Friday, and maybe a chance of rain, and the fact that, the geniuses who decide when these games are going to be played figured that, the Pac-12 network and all, 400 people that will be watching needed a 7:30 game next Saturday night. So it's 6:30 Pacific time. But, you know, so it'll go all day in the 40s and then be down to 28 or something at kickoff, which will be delightful. Although I will say this, 2 years ago, USC went up there and played after a snowstorm and played lights out, I thought. You know, really, you know, handled themselves awfully well in those conditions. So, and this is in recent years, weather doesn't seem to have been a negative factor for USC. So, I think this is a team that, you know, pretty much has been able to focus, you know, one game at a time. And as much of a cliche as that is, this is probably, I think, the one thing that you like to look at and say, I think USC should be able to get back to running the football this week, and that'll mean a lot, the ability to be able to run and then throw play action off the run, force Colorado to defend the run, and turn them loose on the artificial turf if it's not raining. But that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I'll be out there in Boulder with you, so we'll have a good time Saturday night. I'm going to dress warm. That's going to be cool.
Bring your skis. one thing, last 2 years ago, it is interesting. You're right on the edge of the mountains and all that, but we're sitting there doing our post, our story, and there goes this beautiful fox. Just walked, the lights were still on the stadium. Nobody left on the field. The fox just went from one end of the stadium to the other, just down the artificial turf, and you realize, okay, we're a little bit out here. It's just a different place. It's a neat stadium, neat place to watch a game if you're, near Colorado. Folsom Field is a great kind of historic college football stadium, and you really will enjoy yourself there. So show up and root for the Trojans.
All right, everyone, go out and do that. Dan said it. Dan declared it, so that's what you should do. All right, well, yeah. Dan, thanks again for coming on the show. It was a really fun night covering college football, and we look forward to a couple more here and see what happens at the end with Coach O.
That's right. It's, stay tuned, as we say. There's never a non-news day when it involves USC football. You know, 24/7, 365. Just don't miss a day.
Yeah, that's why you got to check out uscfootball.com and the Peristyle. We're always talking about it. All right. Well, thanks, Dan, and everyone else. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Peristyle podcast. We'll do a Armchair Quarterback podcast this week. Maybe we'll even slip in a recruiting podcast because lots of recruits were out there at the Coliseum watching that win. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.